All right, we're back on One True Podcast talking Baylor and Big 12 football again for, oh, I don't know, the 11-jillionth season here. Remember when we started this, John? We didn't even know what a podcast was.
Oh, it was so, so long ago. Many eons.
And many fans ago. Yes, we've built our audience. And so it's John Werner alongside Bryce Cherry. We got Wynn Emmons on the turntables over there, pushing all the buttons that make us sound normal. And our special guest this week is David Flores. Long time at the San Antonio Express News. He was there about 30 years. He's been for the last 10 years at Ken's 5, which is the CBS affiliate in San Antonio. David, thanks for jumping on with us.
Well, thank you. Thank you to you and John for thinking about me and inviting me. I always enjoy talking about the Baylor Bears, and this is the best time of the year. I've always, we're old enough to remember Dan Cook, who was kind of a legend. He was our local legend here.
Yeah.
Worked at the Express News and was one of those few guys. He was a, never again will there be somebody like him, that was also the TV anchor for Ford, coincidentally the same sports anchor, the same station that I worked for. And he used to always say that if you, around this time of the year, if you didn't get that little quiggly feeling in the pit of your stomach and you, weren't fired up about what you did for a living, that you needed to go sell shoes at Tom McCann. Of course, you tell somebody that now, they won't even know what you're talking about. Tom McCann went out of business years ago. I've always thought about that. I always get kind of nervous, have a little anxiety before the first Friday of the high school season. I ask myself, I wonder if I'm still going to get that little feeling that Dan Cook used to talk about.
Yeah.
Hey, David, I remember when Dan got off the SWC press tour. We used to go from Big 12 campus to campus. But he got off in the mid-80s because he noticed reporters were drinking Diet Cokes and playing Trivial Pursuit instead of doing other things late at night.
He just had to get off. He couldn't take it.
He could
really tell a story. You know, he could really tell the story. And he had that column of his, and he really I remember writing about that. He came back and told us about it, about how he was never going to go, back. And I remember he and Blackie Sherrod, of course, who were contemporaries and were good friends. And he talks about, you know, it was always great to have somebody of his experience and all. And every once in a while, as we always do, you know, there'd be a little complaining sometimes around the water cooler about, well, the grind and this and that, the routine and all that. And he said, hey guys, hey, he'd remind us. He said, hey, don't complain too much, because one of these days, we may have to get a real job.
Yeah,
we're gonna do.
Exactly.
He kind of kept things in perspective.
Yeah, mm-hmm. No doubt. Well, while we're reminiscing like that, we'll get back to our fun job here, which is talking football. So after dismantling Stephen F. Austin last week, Baylor faces UTSA. It's the third straight year the Bears and Roadrunners have met. This one's back at McLean Stadium in Waco after Baylor went to the Alamo Dome last year. But before we delve deeper into this matchup and kind of the Roadrunner team, I'm curious to ask you, David, where UTSA football kind of ranks on the San Antonio sports landscape. As a guy that's been there a long time, I mean, you know the city loves the Spurs. The Spurs are kind of, you know, the big thing there, and I know high school football is big, but now that we're kind of almost a decade into this UTSA football experiment, you know, how is that program viewed by local sports fans?
Real good question. You know, real good question. You know, I kind of, you're right. You know, the San Antonio is a big, the Spurs, or the Spurs are kind of a, they're the only big game in town. You know, we don't have any other, for a city of this size, we have no other pro franchise. And we always chuckle that whenever the Spurs go to the playoffs, it's not unlike the scenes that we see around the state during the Texas football playoffs. Everybody puts all the merchants in town, you know, go Spurs, go. It's almost like all the way to state or whatever, you know, and people really get behind the team. And for years and years and years, you know, speaking of the Southwest Conference, those of us that used to cover the conference, we would go back, to the office after being on the road or whatever on Sundays to write our follow-ups and to look at the week ahead. And we would always lament the fact that San Antonio, didn't have a Southwest Conference team. And we all, and even more than that, Bryce, we didn't even have a scholarship football program. With all due respect to Trinity, Trinity at one time was, you know, had a scholarship program back in the days when they had the old college division. You know, I guess the one, which would have been the 1AA thing. But then they went Division III. And so we didn't even have a scholarship program. And we wondered if we ever would. We said, how did we ever miss out on something like that? You know, a city of this size. Well, lo and behold, that within 2 or 3 years, we wound up with not one, but two. You know, and Carter Word started playing on the Division II level, and they eventually got to the FCS level in 2009. And then 2 years after they started, UTSA kicked off the season with, you know, Larry Coker, as we all know, the old Miami coach in 2011. And so this is their ninth season. A long, convoluted way to say that they're finding their way. You know, they've got their base. They've got their fan base, Bryce. I would say that they had about 26 and change, close to 27,000 the other day. And I figured, well, that's for them, that's a pretty good crowd. But it was special circumstance because it was they were playing Incarnate Word. And so Incarnate Word obviously does not have a very established program. But since it was a local team and I'm sure there were some curious people that wanted to go see the game. But if it's just a regular Conference USA opponent that come in, all that, if they're not having a real good year like last year and even the year before that, they're gonna be scraping the bottom of the 20,000. They'll be 20, 21, 22,000 and stuff. So they're still finding their way, and they need a lot of still have a lot of work to do. But they have one thing going for them. I mean, be it ever so humble, the Alamo Dome is already, you know, open in '93, so it's ancient by those facility standards, but. You could do a lot worse than watching a football game in September in Texas, in a place like that.
Absolutely, absolutely.
Yeah, I kind of wish we had one up here this Saturday, 3 o'clock kickoff.
I'm with you, John. I'm with you.
Yeah, no doubt. Well, let's talk a little bit about this game coming up. I mean, neither of the past two times that Baylor's played UTSA in the Matt Rhule era, neither of those games were blowouts. The Roadrunners, of course, won in 2017, 17-10. That was the second game of Matt Rhule's debut season here at Baylor. They went 1-11 that year, the Bears did. And then last year, Baylor led by a touchdown at halftime and then kind of stretched out the lead in the second half. It ended up 37-20. So for round three, how do you guys see this one breaking, you know, breaking down? John, I'm going to start with you.
Yeah, I think Baylor has, I would say, a significantly better team than they had last year.
Right.
They've got so much more experience. Obviously, those guys in 2017, as their second game of the year, a lot of them probably shouldn't have even been on the field, but Baylor's roster was so thin that they had to be on the field. They, you know, they lost to Liberty the week before.
Right.
So they just weren't a very good team back then. They got a lot better last year, and I think they're pretty good this year. And I think the thing with UTSA is they're such a physical team that I think this will be a pretty good test for them and maybe something that will probably help them down the road. You know, just because they're not a Power 5 school, I think this is a game that can help Baylor build. But, you know, but since they lost to UTSA here 2 years ago, I think that's quite a bit of motivation.
Sure. What do you think, David?
I agree with John. I agree with John. The game last year, you could tell that Baylor, as John said, they really, you know, had really improved, you know, and I watched the game, you know, 2 years ago when UTSA were, and I fell for Baylor. I mean, boy, they were thin and just not very talented, but you knew that Rhule was going to get them back on track, you know, and he has. And I just, and John is right, that the strength of the UTSA defense is their defensive line. Really, it's the strength of the team. They've got last week against Incarnate Word. You know, we all figured that it was going to come down to that. Could the Incarnate Word offensive line handle the talented, deep, and physical defensive line of UTSA, and they couldn't.
Right.
And then after the game, Wilson said that he rotated at those four positions on the D line. They rotated 12 players. He said they're three deep without much of a drop off, relatively speaking, for a program of their, you know, their of their age and all that. They're pretty good. They've got some players there, but I don't think that Baylor negates that strength. Saturday, and I think it's going to come down to what can the offense of UTSA do against Baylor, and it's going to be kind of not a rude awakening, but they're going to know that they're not in Kansas anymore. They're not going to be playing an FCS team, and one game doesn't make a season, obviously, but it doesn't make a turnaround either. Last year, UTSA was atrocious offensively. I'm sure you guys know that. They were number among the 130 FBS teams. They were dead last in total offense. They lost their last six games of the year. Two of those games, they only kicked a field goal each. And two of those losses, they got shut out in another one. So they were atrocious. And of course, this year they're a little bit better because they've got a better quarterback.
Yeah, they don't. You mentioned the D line. They don't have another Marcus Davenport coming up.
No, they don't have that. They don't have that. They don't have a standout like that. They're all just pretty good, but I think they can be run on. I really think they can be run on, and I won't be a bit surprised to see Baylor get some, sustain some drives with a good running game. But I expect Baylor to be able to handle the Roadrunners.
Right. Let's talk a little bit about Baylor's non-conference schedule. John, you mentioned that you feel like this game will test Baylor in some areas, but as David said, I mean, obviously, UTSA has struggled on offense, last year. And so, Baylor's last week played SFA. This week they have UTSA. The third game will be against Rice down in Houston. It's not exactly murderer's row. And this is also a continuation of a trend for Baylor, kind of going back to the Art Briles era. Baylor has not played a ranked team in non-conference play since 2011. That was TCU the year before TCU joined the Big 12. And they've played only two games against a Power 5 team in that span. Both of those were against Duke. So if Rule's team wants to take the next step in the Big 12, doesn't it need to start playing some tougher teams?
Yeah, I think definitely so. And they will. Next year they play Ole Miss in Houston. Yeah. Then they have a two-year contract with BYU. Then they play Utah a couple years. And let's see, they got Oregon down the road.
Mm-hmm.
So it's really kind of strange because the last 2 years they'd at least played Duke.
Right.
Not that they're great, but they were a Power 5 school.
Right.
But this is like, kind of like the outlier in the schedule.
Yeah, it is.
And they're, let's say, take a 10-year span. It's I would challenge anybody to find a worse Power 5 non-conference schedule.
Yeah, and if Baylor can win, let's say 10 games this year, which it's in play, given that it gets, Texas and Oklahoma here and Waco, and you kind of expect the Bears to make another jump, here in year three under Rule. Let's say they were just happen to be in that sort of mix of teams competing for a playoff spot. I don't really see that happen. I think they're still maybe a little bit away from that. But if they were, they'd get hammered just like, what was it, 2014 the first year of the college football playoff, and Baylor got hammered, rightfully so, for its non-conference schedule.
Yeah, where Baylor is right now, I don't think it's a terrible non-conference schedule for them. But I think as the years go on, it would be.
Yeah.
I mean,
if you're going to build
to
be a contender, you've got to mix in at least one good game.
Yeah, and they will in upcoming years. This is just kind of like the weird season in a 10-year span where they didn't take that next step up.
Right. David, how do people down there view Baylor?
Yeah, I agree totally with what John is saying. If you're going to play this kind of schedule that Baylor is playing, you want to play it right now, which is still early, in the Rule era, and they've had a lot of work to do, mentally, physically, and everything else because of all the problems that they've had. You got to get back on the horse, so to speak, so they can kind of have a little bit of license, if you will, for playing this kind of schedule. It's kind of like building blocks, but it's good to hear John talking about some of the teams they've got on their schedule, and I figured that up the road it would kind of pick up a little bit. You know, people here are not they know that Baylor is Baylor, and they know that the reputation and certainly the tradition, if you will, the program, you know, Baylor's had through years, and they know that UTSA, even despite the problems that Baylor had here a few years ago, that UTSA is stepping up in a competition. My God, I mean, it's a power conference team and all that. So it's gonna be tough for UTSA to gain traction against Baylor. I have no doubt about that.
Yeah. Well, the game of the week in the Big 12, Pitt's number 9 Texas against number 6 LSU in Austin on Saturday. There's been a lot of talk about the Longhorns being back. You know, last year we even heard Sam Ellinger make that comment, Texas is back. And he took a little heat for that or whatever. I look at this game, guys, as probably the biggest test of the Tom Herman era, which is also in year 3, at Texas. Obviously, you know, you could maybe argue that with some of the Oklahoma matchups or whatever, but it's going to be a tough game, no doubt about it. But if Texas really is back, doesn't it need to win a game like this at home? David, I'll start with you. What do you think?
Well, yeah, it's got to be able to win a game. It's got to. And I don't know. I'm pretty hard on UT, and I know obviously that they've got problems like everybody else does, and they're not Superman and everything else. But I don't think it's really out of the realm of things to expect for Texas with all the advantages that they have. You know, the tradition that they have, all the money that they've had, all the fan base that they have. Austin, blah, 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 the recruiting and all that, to expect for them to finish. I don't think it's unrealistic to expect for them to finish. There shouldn't be a time, and I know every dog can't stay on top all the time, but this thing about, well, we're back, and oh, they're gone, oh, we're back, and I don't know. They should be able to finish, you know, the top 10, if not the top 5, 6, 7, 8 every year, you know, and that's the way I look at it. Maybe I'm just being unfair to them and all that, but you're right. You're darn cheating. LSU is tough. They've got a pretty good ball club. But UT should be able to win that. Should be one of their signature wins this season. If they lose, well, here we go again. I don't cut them much slack, and I'm sorry.
Yeah, no, that's fine.
Yeah, I'm right on board with you, David. I think they've got to win this game at home. I mean, I don't know that they're really back.
Right.
I mean, think Ellinger might have jumped the gun a little there. But, you know, if they win a game like this, they're definitely closer to being back.
Yeah, well, that certainly validates that top 10 ranking that they have. We've talked about it on this podcast a lot, John, that it seems like every year, now granted, they actually won a season opener this year, but it seems like every year that Texas would be too highly ranked.
They
didn't
play Maryland, though.
They did not play.
Yeah, you're right.
They would be. Yeah, so if they're.
Mice, don't you know that ESPN game day is going to be there? That really means they're back.
Right.
So those guys are going to be there.
Yeah. Well, and I actually saw, some of our Austin buddies, you know, guys like Kirk and Brian Davis and those guys down there. I saw them tweeting out pictures from Memorial Stadium there last week, and the students who have been hammered kind of a lot at Texas for showing up late, kind of having that, you know, Laker fan sort of blasé attitude. They were there like 90 minutes before the game in the sun. So, you know, credit to Texas students who I guess probably think the Longhorns are back, I guess. So, and I imagine this one you won't be able to find a seat anywhere in there.
No, I think an interview. I think Scott Van Pelt had Herman on. Was it on Labor Day night, the night of the Notre Dame Louisville game or something? They had an interview with him, and he really praised the AD, saying that he's really helped with the game day experience, and that more, you know, fans are short, like as you said, by showing up early, and it's more of a college crowd, really, you know, and all that. So we'll we'll see. It'll be a good ball game, but we'll see how it turns out.
Yeah, definitely be watching that one on Saturday night. So finally, before we get out of here, David, we kind of have a little tradition here on the One True Podcast. I think I started calling it Culinary Corner, didn't I, John?
what a ring that has.
Yes, it does, really. So, David, even though Baylor is not going down to San Antonio this weekend, I have actually my in-laws live in San Antonio.
Oh, okay.
Obviously, you know, it's the home to the state high school basketball tournament. So,
right.
You know, I mean, there's a chance I'll be there in the coming months, and John perhaps as well. And so this is really self-serving, honestly, but
This is the most important question.
Yeah, it really is. So
get ready.
As a San Antonio guy for a long time, what's your favorite eating spots, and maybe even some that are a little under the radar, or you know, not everybody you know maybe knows about?
And I'm writing this down.
Well, first of all, you know, obviously the food here, I chuckle with what you said, because I've got a good friend I used to work with at the paper. Now he's a real big sports guy, but now he's wound up in the food section. He writes about food and all that.
Wow. Well,
it's really funny because you know, he said David, this is an old Midwesterner, okay? But he said, David, I concluded long ago that tacos are the crack cocaine of San Antonio. He says once I had my first one, I couldn't kick the habit. I heard a lot of things about tacos, but being compared to the crack cocaine was not. I never heard that. So I thought, check, you're pretty good.
That is pretty good.
I've got one, but you're gonna have to get out your high school Spanish thing here.
Okay,
it's two words. It's now this is a good restaurant. It's not a greasy spoon. It's just off, but it's off the beaten path, so to speak. It's not a tourist place, but it's real easy to get to from Loop 410. It's called Las Caletas. It's L-A-S, capital L, of course, A-S, Las, and then Caletas means C-A, it's spelled C-A-R-R-E-T-A-S, really, really a good place. That's my go-to place. It's not the, you know, you can go downtown to La Margarita or Bitiera, you know, that are down in Market Square, where all the tourists go. Now, those are good places, but those are more, you'll find more of the tourists there. And you can't go wrong with those. You know, that's an experience, because you go in there and they've got the Spanish sweet bread, the Mexican sweet bread and stuff that you can, the bakery there and stuff at Bitiera and stuff like that. But Las Caletas, if you're ever here, just Google that and check your GPS, and you'll find it.
I'm doing it right now.
You'll like it. It's very reasonable. And also, that's a good touch. I like that, Bryce.
Well, like I said, you know, sports writers, sports guys, sportscasters, I mean, the first thing you do whenever you're like going to a game somewhere, it's like chart out where you're going to eat. So,
maybe you can come. Yeah. In the future, when you come to San Antonio, there you go. And if you've got in-laws here, you need to go try that place.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Well, thanks for that vital piece of information.
Yeah, that's one we'll be writing down.
I know you all would do the same for me if I asked where was the place.
Yes.
To Waco.
So, yes, you know, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely.
Exactly. You bet.
All right. Well, David, thanks for coming on with us, and have a great football season, buddy.